Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars, the show that takes you through every Best Picture nominee from 1927 to today. I'm your host, Kyle.
And I'm Ryan.
And today we're talking about the third and final film of the 1929 Academy Awards season. But how are you doing, Ryan? I want to talk to you.
Yeah, man, I'm good. We got to catch up a little bit. We both got a little bit of a break. We were able to go to Orlando separately. And have a nice little vacation. It was good. It was, I go every year, so I know you do as we both go every year.
Yeah, I hit up Halloween Horror Nights every year.
Yeah, I prioritize Disney as well, but Halloween Horror Nights has been something I've been doing for, since 2017, I think, 2018,
nice.
Maybe a little before that. Yeah, I really like to do it whenever I can, so it's been nice. And, you know, I got to catch up some movies. We talked about, you know, I watched VHS, Halloween, and able to catch one battle after another, so I'm just... You mentioned, I think off podcast before, that like you don't know how I watch the movies that I watch.
Yeah.
Like how I'm able to watch how many movies I watch. And the answer is that I have no life. But I just prioritize the stuff that I feel like is going to be important for conversation. And that goes hand in hand with the movies that we do here, because obviously this conversation is a big part of it. So caught up on everything with this year of the 1929 ceremonies. And... got to watch one after another, VHS, pretty good. How have you been doing?
I've been solid.
Good.
Had my vacation. Watched one movie in the time span that you watched, like 47, so, you know.
Three, but who's counting?
Yeah, yeah, well, you know. And not even, like, an important movie. I watched Megan, so.
Look, I watched VHS.
Yeah,
so
but
it's okay.
That's new. I watched the hit movie from, what, 4 years ago or whatever?
You watched the hit movie that... is the original to a sequel that came out 4 months ago. So you're like right almost there in popularity.
Yeah, I can at least talk about stuff that exists.
Yeah.
I did it.
That's
I
bare minimum. It. Good job.
Hooray.
Yeah. No, it's been good. And we talked also about how it's fall weather outside. So like really, it really was when... This is the best time to go to Orlando. Can we agree with that? Because you go and it's hot. It's miserable in Orlando. But then you come home... And it's so cool.
Yeah, it's like, where'd the weather go? It's, I'm okay that you left.
I'm totally fine with that. I agree. Yeah, it's spooky season. It's great. It's nice to have fall weather and have breezes. So, very excited.
Totally. I mentioned before we got started today about the episodes being recorded so much earlier than when they drop. And even now, I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, it's still going to be October when this episode drops.
That's true.
So, it'll still be nice and cool.
Yeah.
Isn't that great.
I think we really don't have to worry about that again until, like, March or April.
Yeah.
Because then it's really, like, who knows when the weather's going to change again.
Yeah. And, I mean, with the way things are going, we might have a 90-degree December. So.
Don't do that to me.
Yeah, that would be...
Don't put that curse on me, Ricky Bobby.
Pretty miserable. Hey, we watched Wings.
We did watch Wings.
So...
And I prepared and watched Wings on YouTube and didn't try Tubi.
And how'd that go for you?
Actually, that's a lie. I put on Tubi, and within the first 5 minutes, I was like, cool. Let's try YouTube. It was wrong. Wrong track on Tubi. Not criminally wrong.
Okay.
And I think even the rack... I take that back. The racket is criminally wrong because it does bust out the nutcracker.
Yeah.
But I think it was serviceable with Wings. But I'm so glad I watched Wings on YouTube for that purpose because there's so many like sound effects with that. And we'll get to that. But... Yeah, no, YouTube far superior for capturing the essence of these movies than Tubi is.
I wish I would have known that before we started.
I wish I would have known that before we
started. Yeah, I guess it's
because I would have enjoyed Seventh Heaven way more than I did.
I guess I'm glad I didn't know that.
One thing I'd like to talk about, though, when we get to the end of this is, you know, maybe we'll talk about this in the ceremonies episode, but I would definitely like to talk about what we think should win. Like what our favorites were of those three.
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
We wrap our conversation on the Wings.
And you know, that's actually a Patreon benefit.
Is it?
Yeah, if you are a Patreon member, we will be posting a poll every month where you can go and you can vote on what you think should have won Best Picture.
Oh, that's great. The audience can vote.
Yeah. So I figured we could do something during the ceremony episode where we announce the winner of the Once Upon a Time at the Oscars Academy Patreon Guild member.
That's it.
Yeah, that's the one. So copyright that trademark. But yeah, no, I love that idea. No spoilers. I think this year is kind of an easy win. Yeah. But there will be years where it's like, what actually won? We're not going to agree. Let's vote.
Yeah.
So.
Especially, I mean, this is going to happen much sooner than later, but especially in the older years, more recent years, a lot of controversy around what should win and what did win.
Right.
So we'll get there.
Absolutely. I'm actually super excited to talk about this movie, though.
Yeah.
I am genuinely a fan.
We talked about it, I think, on the pod a few weeks ago, but when Kyle and I were talking about bringing back this iteration of the pod, he actually was at a screening for Wings.
Yeah.
At the Earl Strand Theater. So tell me about that screening.
It was pretty awesome. The local theater, I believe they do this around every 4th of July. Mm-hmm. They screen Wings, and they have a live organ player doing the score, which is, it's so cool. Have you seen any films with a live organ?
Playing throughout?
Mm-hmm.
No, last Christmas I went to, I'm not doing Wham, I went to the Strand and I saw It's a Wonderful Life at the Strand. And that was just, I felt like I was living my best Hallmark life. Where it's just like everything is perfect and idyllic.
Yeah.
Being able to see It's a Wonderful Life in theaters. But that did not require an organ to be played throughout. So he played before, though, which I've seen plenty of times.
Yeah. That guy's awesome.
Great.
He's so good. But Wings, it's so funny because you talked about the score that exists on YouTube and Tubi and all of that.
Right.
I did check it on YouTube, and the score on YouTube I'm a big fan of. That's the original way I saw it. So when I saw the organ player, as cool as that experience was, I was like, this isn't that score. But tons of fun. Such a great experience. I think any opportunity you have to see any movie, really, but especially a classic film that you don't normally get to experience on the big screen, go take that opportunity. It feels right. It feels like those movies were supposed to be seen in that format.
I think that it's important for us to have these experiences that we can still go back to. And that's why, you know, it's super important to support, you know, your local theaters. Let's talk a little bit about Wings before we get into our thoughts on it.
Yeah, let me throw out all of the credits for Wings.
Yeah.
Wings came out in 1927, produced by Paramount Pictures, directed by William A. Wellman, and starred Clara Bow of Taylor Swift fame.
She's in the headlines.
She is. Charles Buddy Rogers and Richard Arlen. And this movie is also very famous for Gary Cooper's debut.
Very quick debut.
Super quick. Super tragic. Were you expecting... spoilers, everybody. That's how this works. There's always spoilers in these episodes. Were you expecting Gary Cooper to die?
No.
Cool.
Let's space that out, and it's still true. I didn't expect Gary Cooper, and I didn't expect Gary Cooper to die.
Perfect.
So
you got the double whammy.
Was like, is that Gary Cooper? And then he died. I was like, Gary Cooper just died.
Yeah. Is that Gary Cooper? Was that Gary Cooper?
And it's interesting because, again, like, we look back in hindsight, and when you watch this, you're not like, oh, this must have been the first thing Gary Cooper was in. You just know who Gary Cooper is.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, what's he doing here? And then he dies, and you're like, that was the first thing he did?
Right. You just kind of assume Gary Cooper, like, invented the camera.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then he just stopped working.
And what an incredible first movie for him to be in.
Isn't it?
Especially for all the camera work.
Yeah, that he invented.
That he invented himself.
So this movie is a World War I plane movie, really. It is all about plane combat and romance.
It is.
Yeah.
It's interesting because when you say Wings, I have a couple of things that I think of. One, it's no Cheers, but pretty okay sitcom. Two, it's not the Beatles, but pretty good band.
Sure.
Right? So with Wings, I don't necessarily think of the movie, but I think inherently, if you talk to anyone who knows anything about, like, cinema, and you mention Wings, they're going to bring up the dolly shot.
Yeah.
The dolly shot is a thing that people like know this movie specifically. I'm victim to this. When I hear Wings, I think of that dolly shot because I hadn't seen it before the research for this pod.
Right.
So I was very interested in doing this, but my question for you is that having seen this at the Strand, what did the camera work feel like to you? Did it feel as important to you as it was intended to be back then, or did it just feel like a gimmick shot?
I think that specific shot, the dolly shot, mm-hmm. there was a little bit of Leo on the couch pointing and being like, there it is.
Yep, yep.
It's such a great shot. And just in case you haven't watched the movie along with us, it is a camera sitting on a dolly. Obviously, you can't see the dolly. And there's a row of tables out on the streets of France.
Correct.
And the camera...
It's a nightclub.
A nightclub, thank you. Yeah. The camera moves forward along the dolly track, going between patrons sitting at these small round tables. And there's like a line of four of them. And what they did is they had the tables be able to separate. So as the camera moved towards them, tables separated, and it moved through the couple sitting at these tables and ultimately ended on our stars. Buddy Rogers. I think it was Buddy Rogers at the time.
It was.
And his little French girlfriend in the club. It's beautiful shot. It's so good. It's been replicated many, many times. Probably the one I've seen mentioned the most is The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
They do that shot when they're at the casino planet, well, wherever that is.
That's where I want to be, man. The casino planet.
Yeah?
That sounds great. Maybe not that specific casino planet, but like a casino planet. It sounds great.
Does it? I have no desire to go to a casino planet.
Really?
Yeah. It's just, maybe I'm worn out from vacation. I need quiet for a little while.
Maybe I want to be in like a casino planet, like Scorsese, Robert De Niro, like planet. Maybe there's more murder there than an actual casino. I don't know.
I just want Naboo sounds great right now. I just want to be on the little shore.
I don't think there's an idyllic planet in Star Wars for me. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it all seems kind of miserable.
Which, you know, real life.
Yeah.
Good job, Lucas.
Yeah, you did it. You nailed it.
You did it. Yeah, with Wings specifically, you know, I was interested because walking into this, obviously I have the knowledge of that shot specifically. But I wasn't prepared for the, and this is my own maybe naivety, but I wasn't expecting great shots throughout.
Right.
Right.
Because you thought really that
only
was
heard
it.
Of the one. I've only heard of the dolly shot. So imagine my surprise when a movie that's, and maybe this was, you know, good prep with Seventh Heaven. Seventh Heaven really just puts you in war. And yeah, there's some cool shots, but it's mostly just like war. With this, you know, we celebrate F1, we celebrate Top Gun Maverick, and we talk about how difficult it is to film flying scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wings just does it in 1927.
Yep.
And films dogfighting scenes.
It's insane.
What the hell? How are they able to do this?
I love this because William Wellman, he flew planes mm-hmm. in the war, right? In this book I'm reading, there's a great story of how he got attached to this project. Douglas Fairbanks, who is the president of the Academy at this time, mm-hmm. he sent him a letter and said, good luck out there fighting that war. When you get back, I've got a job for you. Douglas Fairbanks was chilling at his sweet Hollywood pad with Mary Pickford mm-hmm. when all of a sudden a plane lands in his backyard. Out pops William Wellman, and he's like, hey, what's up, man? I'm here for that job. That's a real story.
I think we should do that now whenever we find like applications that we're really interested in.
Yes.
Is just fly a plane to the CEO of the company and be like, I'm here.
Something tells me that will be risky in today's climate.
You're right.
But I'm still going to do it. That sounds awesome.
It's worth it.
Dude. Hey,
William Wellman did it.
That is such a cool story, though. Like, I don't know.
People talk about like, you know, I'd like to be alive in the 20s and stuff like that. That's the reason.
Yeah, because those stuff like that happened.
Yeah.
It's insane. So because he was a pilot in World War I, I believe, I should have wrote this down, Buddy Rogers was also a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the skill and they really just attached cameras to these planes and just went for it. It's so cool. It's so cool that this exists in the 20s, in the late 20s. Richard Arlen was not a pilot. He learned to fly for this movie. I don't know, man. When I hear this stuff, like, I get giddy and excited because I feel like Ryan Gosling learned how to play piano for La La Land, mm-hmm. you know, which is cool. And there are a lot of actors who learn how to do all of these really, really dangerous technical stunts for their roles. I guess it makes more sense that that existed in the 20s when there weren't unions that are like, no, no, take it easy. But it's still crazy to me that this is what they did in the 20s and it made something as impressive as Wings.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of unreal because there's definitely moments where you're watching, you know, there's pullback shots of the planes actually dogfighting. And then there's more intense close-ups where you talked about having the cameras mounted on the planes and capturing their actions. In the background, you're not really sure if it's a green screen. I mean, back then, not green screen, but, you know, a supplement screen put behind them to capture this footage or if they're really flying. And even if it were green screen, let's just, for the sake of simplicity, say green screen. If it was that, it's still very intricate back then to be like, okay, well, this is the scene where, like, you get shot, and this is the scene where, like, you react this way, and this is where you fall out. It's just very impressive that in 1927, they were able to do the filming and editing that they did with this. And maybe I feel that way because watching The Seventh Heaven and The Racket, you didn't feel that level of technical achievement. You felt the level of connection to the story, and, like, it felt important that the camera was in a specific location. But in terms of capturing these shots, it didn't feel near as important as Wings did. And the good thing about Wings is that it isn't just a movie with incredible shots. It also has the best story of the three, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's why it makes sense that Wings won Best Picture, because it really did, or most outstanding, because it did really feel like it handled the war with the correct tone, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned in the Seventh Heaven episode that it really is just like, man, I gotta go to war in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And here it feels a little bit more like they actually, like, space out and, like, let people live in this idea of, like, oh, I'm leaving my life. You know, David has to leave this life of luxury and, like, his family behind to go and serve. Whereas with David, I think they said specifically he's middle class. He's not lower class.
Mm-hmm.
He's middle, but certainly not to David's level, to where he has a little bit less to leave behind and he's almost a little more eager to go.
Yeah.
So they allow, I mean, this is the benefit of having two actors instead of one going to war, but you're allowed to see how differently these people react to these moments. And it's just, it's a very interesting triangle. And I say triangle because I want to bring up a very interesting thing. From my records and my research, and I'm hoping you can confirm this for me, this is kind of the origin of the love triangle stereotype.
That's interesting. I actually don't know if that's true or not, but I'll take it.
I did some research, and it looks like there really wasn't anything mentioned about a love triangle in film prior to 1927 because of Wings. So the relationship between Jack, David, and Mary really was Mary or Sylvia. I'm blanking on
it.
So it's Sylvia. That's correct, because Mary's back home. Mary actually has a really interesting sub-story that I want to talk about.
No. I'm sorry. Clara Bow is Mary.
Yes.
So she's out in the war.
Correct.
Sylvia is the one at home.
Correct. Okay, got it. So it's that love triangle between the three of them that it really was the origin of this triangle concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because you really don't see the triangle in very high prevalence until more recently, right? Like in the past 20, 30 years or so.
Yeah.
But it was something that has existed. Just interesting to see that Wings is the origin of it.
That is bizarre. It, man, Wings, I hear people talk about Wings a lot and how it gets recognized for Outstanding Picture being the first big picture winner.
Right. Spoiler.
Spoiler, yeah. But we mentioned this before, how there was the Outstanding Picture and then the most artistic, unique artistic picture or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And Sunrise, A Tale of Two Humans, that's a fantastic movie. It won that Oscar. It gets kind of kicked away from the limelight because of Wings being the best picture winner. But beyond Outstanding Picture, Wings was the origin of the love triangle, I'm finding out. It was just a huge technical advancement when it comes to film techniques and all of that. We didn't mention the two Oscars it was nominated for, Outstanding Picture and then Engineering Effects.
Which is so deserved, I mean, right. Just based on what we're saying.
And this is the only year that Oscar existed.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why, but
probably because they don't want to compete with Wings.
Yeah, like every year you'd have to create something completely just groundbreaking.
That's the tough thing. And like, you know, we'll step out of 1930s and step into, you know, more overarching times. That's what's difficult, is that I think that inherently with, when it comes to these awards, you start comparing, right? Not just with like what happened in 1930, but like what happened last year, and like what you're technically, think of it as like a title, like what you're taking that title off of. So it's difficult for me to imagine a movie, a company at that, in 1930, looking back at Wings in 1927 and saying, what can we do to take the technical achievement award off of Wings? And with the movies that they're making, I mean, All Quiet on the Western Front, there's some options. But for the most part, it's a daunting task. Why would you want to do that? So maybe they did him a favor taking that award off.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. But yeah, what a groundbreaking film. So we mentioned a little bit about the plot. You have the two gentlemen back at home, Jack and David. Mm-hmm. They're besties, right? Were they besties before the war? They were, right?
Jack and David?
Yeah.
It really wasn't. I think they were besties via the war.
Okay.
Because in the very beginning, it really does just show Jack with Sylvia and then David with his family. And then when they both get called into war, they do bunk together.
Gotcha. So Richard Arlen was an actual pilot, and Buddy Rogers did not fly, but he learned how to fly for this film, which is pretty crazy.
That makes a bit more sense, too.
Yeah.
Like looking at their characters, that it seems like it was kind of written into them a little bit, too. And also, isn't it fitting that the rich kid probably has some knowledge of how to fly this plane?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whereas Jack was more scrappy and working on vehicles, and he can kind of work his way up to it. It's interesting if they did do that on purpose, because it does feel like they kind of wrote that into the characters a little bit.
That would make sense. I could see that. So, like you said, the two go off to war, mm-hmm. and they become friends. Back at home, though, they both are in love with the girl, Sylvia.
Yeah.
The big twist in this love triangle, the first love triangle, is there is also the girl, Mary, played by the absolutely just bundle of energy that is Clara Bow.
Yeah.
That's Mary. She is in love with Jack. She comes over at the beginning of the film, and she's watching him work on his car, and she's almost throwing herself at him.
Right. It's almost embarrassing.
It is. It's almost embarrassing.
Not for her, but for him, that it's like, dog, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, this is Clara Bow. Like, perfect girl next door scenario.
Yeah. Pay attention, dude. Get off the video games and pay attention to Clara Bow.
Leave the car alone.
What did you think of Clara Bow?
I mean, she's magnetic. You know, like, she plays the romantic scenes extremely well. She plays a level of desperation in a character that doesn't feel desperate. It feels more like yearning.
Yeah.
So it feels very pointed towards, in this case, David. Jack specifically.
Yes, Jack. Yeah.
But then there's a scene later on where she's driving an ambulance, and she just clips, I believe it's Jack. She just clips Jack. And that whole scene just feels like, oh, so she's extremely comedic as well. So magnetic is the best word I can think of, because all around she was just crushing any expectation that I had for her. So I love that scene especially because there's something like when movies depict the lightheartedness of war, of like how this guy got, I say clipped, but like hit by a car.
Yeah.
And he can see who's driving it, and he's like, oh, I'm going to ham it up. And the tension on her side, but the comedy on his side is so good. And it's such like a nice welcome break of like, not that the movie, I shouldn't say ever, because towards the end it absolutely does. The movie doesn't have the sense of urgency that war does, right? It does kind of feel like, not glorifying, but more like, I mentioned this on the 7th episode. It feels like, or no, episode 0 actually. It feels like the theme of war is inadvertently the theme, right? Because that's just of the time. But it wasn't ever like All Quiet on the Western Front or the movies that are yet to come, where it's like war is hell.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like war is life. Like, that's just where we are right now.
Yeah.
So war did just kind of feel like the setting for Wings rather than the theme of Wings. And having that scene in there of Clara Bow striking Jack with a car definitely felt case in point of how they can bring the comedy into this. And it did make it feel like a well-rounded movie for me. So her in general, phenomenal.
Yeah, I totally agree. This movie feels, of all of the movies we've watched this year, there's something for everyone in this movie. Obviously, you have the romance with the love triangle, quadrilateral? What's a four called? A square. It's a square.
Well,
it's a
so
rectangle.
That's the thing is that you don't hear love square, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think like a term that I heard coined when I did the research for this was a four-sided triangle, which I was like, that's a square, but cool. Yeah, four-sided triangle. So it's a four-sided triangle, but for all intents and purposes, the majority of it is the triangle.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
The 3 points of Jack, David, and Mary.
Absolutely. Sylvia. Dude, yes. I keep it. This is hard.
It's
this
tough.
Is like, hey, here's like some really common names. Good luck. But
well, that's the difficult thing too. Is that like, you know, it's not to say this is why our jobs are hard, but like specifically in these movies where everything is a title card, you don't have these moments of people looking at each other and saying names over and over to where you have that recognition.
Right.
So yeah, certainly that might be why we're getting some of it wrong, but. I don't know. Maybe that'll change in the next year when we have our talkies officially in the entries.
Yeah, and you can hear people actually saying the names.
Right.
I agree. But like I was saying, this movie's got the romance. Mm-hmm. It's got the action of the dogfights and the plane scenes.
Unreal.
It has a ton of comedy, and I think the comedy ends up being kind of the slower points of the movie, not as a whole.
Sure.
But the section of this movie that I think drags out way too long is when Jack is out after a night at the club and he is completely intoxicated and Mary picks him up to tell him, like, hi, it's me. Let's hang out.
Right.
No, she says, you're going back to the front, so we really need to spend some time together because I love you. And he is so wasted and, like, blowing bubbles.
Yep.
For, like, a good 20 minutes, it feels like.
Do. Yeah.
That felt like a moment in this movie where they said, oh, we learned this really cool thing we can do on screen with bubbles. Let's go hard with the bubbles. And it really kind of takes me out of the movie every time I watch this.
I love the idea of a director who's so well-versed in these planes and knows how to film dogfighting scenes and is doing that and is like going equally as hard for bubbles.
Yeah.
It's a great mentality to have.
It makes you wonder if the engineering effects really had anything to do with the planes, or if it was just the bubble scenes.
Like, have you seen how they film bubbles?
It's incredible. But yeah, just it really has everything, this movie, as well as cameos by legendary actors to be, Gary Cooper.
Doesn't it feel like, you know, time is a flat circle when you watch, like, movies now? Or, like, you watch something from the 90s, and you see a prominent actor who's a huge name now, but then they die instantly. Great example. Leo DiCaprio was in Trolls 2, right?
Oh.
There's an actor who's like, it may not be Leo, but there's an actor who's in Trolls 2 where you're kind of like, oh.
Are you saying Critters? Critters 2?
Critters.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Critters. It's not Trolls. That would be a different story. But a similar situation in this one I am actually positive of. Jennifer Aniston in Leprechaun.
Right.
Where you're like, is that Jennifer Aniston in Leprechaun? And then she just like is going to get killed. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. It's good to know that in 1927, it was the same situation where you're like, is that Gary Cooper?
Yeah.
Just died on screen?
It's interesting because usually I feel like that happens in horror movies.
Yes.
You got your Anistons, your Kevin Bacons, your Johnny Depps.
Totally.
Gary Cooper, though? That's a big
new
name.
New Scream Queen.
What did you say?
New Scream Queen. Gary Cooper.
As seen in Wings.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise to see him in there, and honestly, it was kind of like a double take because you're just not really expecting the cameo in 1927. But it was honestly, you know, the research that we do for this podcast to watch these movies with or without the correct audio or score, just to say, you forget sometimes how much fun these can be, right? Like, and Wings was just overall the best time that I had watching these. And it feels like the most fleshed out, you know, not just in your enjoyment, but in also like the importance of it, right? So whether it be, you know, coining the term, they didn't coin the term love triangle, but they introduced the idea of the love triangle on film, or the way that they shoot these shots of dogfighting or like the dolly shot in the club, as you put it. It's just remarkable what they are able to do with it. And the performances that they got, it's unreal. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I agree. Talking back about Gary Cooper, too.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned the romance, the comedy, and all of this. He brings the first taste of, like, a somber moment in this. Because he has his great speech, a really brief monologue. And then he hops in a plane and immediately dies. And it's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of the more powerful scenes in the movie because it does add some realism in what up to this point feels kind of like a playful movie.
Right.
And then you're reminded, oh, this is dangerous, what these people are doing. And that kind of sets up or prepares you for what the finale of this movie is.
Yeah, it's, you know, one thing that seemed kind of not off but interesting to me was that when they first go to war, there is the scene, which, by the way, just in scale, how they are able to film movies back then, the shot of what must have been 100 men on the yard doing their exercises to start the day. Incredible scale on that. But also, just that scene is played for laughs, you know? I think it's Jack who is doing the jumping jacks and landing on David's hat.
Yes.
Or not the jumping jacks, but the push-ups and landing on David's hat. And then you have the goofy character who is introduced to do fighting. And I forget the character's name.
I don't remember his name, but the one with the American flag tattoo?
Yeah, the American flag. It's he was the Swede, right? Because he had the American flag tattoo, and they said like they made fun of him for having the tattoo.
Yes.
Yes. So he goes to have the fight, have a mock fight, and just gets like knocked out time and time again. And it's played for laughs. That whole segment is just played for laughs. And that's the introduction to them in war.
Right.
So I think it's funny to look back at these and think that, you know, war was seen in a lighthearted way. But then they have that somber moment with Gary Cooper. And it's very intentional that, like, it's here to wake you up to, like, the reality of what war is.
Yes.
So it's interesting now to watch back and think that it looks like it's lighthearted. But I'm choosing to see it more as an acceptance of like, well, this is just what happened.
Right.
And not in a somber, like dark way, but like, this is just what reality was for them. And while they tried to make the best of it, let's not forget that like real people lost their lives. And I think that's the importance of Cooper's character.
Yeah. 100%.
Appearance.
And I love that he sombers the audience, but he also sombers the characters as well.
Absolutely.
It's such a great tonal shift without completely derailing the movie into just like, okay, now we're in the sad, depressing part of the movie.
Right.
Because you still have bubbles to come.
Of course.
So
who can forget the bubbles?
Exactly.
But you mentioned the end and how it prepares everyone for the ending. I think the ending is unexpected.
Mm.
I don't want to say twist, but I wonder if it was also one of the original, I guess, for lack of a better word, twist. Of like the idea of the audience knowing something that the characters don't quite know yet.
Yes. It is really a shocking ending to me. Essentially what you see happen, David and Jack have a bit of an argument. They discover that both have been fawning over Sylvia back at home,
mm-hmm.
and they're very upset with each other, but they have to go out and complete a mission. And I believe it is David, the wealthier of the two. They go out, and his plane actually gets shot down.
Correct.
By the enemy behind enemy lines. And for a while, you assume that's it. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
He survives, and he has this incredible section of the movie where he's having to sneak through enemy lines to steal an enemy plane and make his way back to the base. What happens after that is so shocking. Did this like really get you?
It got me because I don't think that you expect a movie from 1927 to do that. I think you would expect a movie like an A24 movie to do that now, because the idea is to subvert that expectation, right? Like the general idea behind that studio, at least for a while, was how unexpected is this going to be? And that's something I didn't expect from 1927. I was firmly in the camp that you mentioned of seeing him shot down and then surviving in enemy lines, behind enemy lines, that's his fate. Mm-hmm. And he's going to meet his fate here behind enemy lines. So when he got the plane, you're thinking, okay, great, well, you're home free. And it's not the case, because what ends up happening is that David, while flying, clocks this German plane. That's
Jack.
You're correct. Yes, Jack clocks this German plane that's coming towards them, towards their base, and shoots it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens to be the plane that David has been piloting.
Right.
And Jack, realizing his mistake, confronts David about this. And the thing that was most interesting to me about that is that how quickly David was like, nah, I get it, man. Like, don't worry. It's okay. And I think that the ultimate thing here is that it had to be the somber moment that you mentioned, right? And not just for the audience, but also for Jack to kind of wake up and like realize the importance of, I guess, overall just life in general, but the importance of putting the things behind him, of like the squabbles that he and David had, and, you know, who he actually wants to be with at the end of the day. So I didn't see that coming. It was pretty shocking to see that happen. I think the music takes you out of it just a little bit.
I guess that depends on what score you're listening to.
Fair.
Because there are so many.
I think like really anything outside of a sad violin is just doesn't feel right for that part.
Right.
But it was nothing that affected my overall tone of it, but it definitely was the more emotional side of a movie that otherwise was just pretty lighthearted.
Yeah.
Even with Gary Cooper's death, you're just kind of like, well, that's a war, right?
Right. The ending is like a hard, hard moment, right. Hard pill to swallow. I think the twist is one thing. The acting is pretty devastating to me. There's a pretty incredible performance from Richard Arlen. He's being shot at by Jack, and he recognizes Jack's plane. So the whole time he's like looking over his shoulder back while bullets are flying towards him, saying, "Jack, don't you know me? It's me." And when he gets hit and the plane goes down, you're just like, wow, this is the worst thing. I can't imagine being that guy who's like, tag another one, that, you know, I'm about to be Red Baron numbers.
Yeah.
And then you land and you see that it is your best friend. And it's really a beautiful scene at the end too, when he's talking to David, holding him in his arms while he's passing away. And they have that really beautiful moment. And I said this movie has everything. It even has their little like catchphrase before they take off where they say all set.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the last thing that they say to each other before David dies. So I just, it almost feels like the cookie cutter perfect movie before that cookie cutter was made.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Everything's wrapped up so nicely.
Yeah.
But see, that's interesting, is that I think that like that catchphrase is very intentional. Because obviously all set would be like, you know, do you have everything that you need for taking off? But the other side of all set for me on that is like, are we good?
Yeah.
Are you and I okay? And did they clean up everything they needed to in order for the story to progress? So it's kind of a three-peat of, or multiple layers, where yes, they as pilots are communicating to each other that like they're all ready to fly. Then these two best friends are communicating to each other, like even in their last moments, like we are okay. Like we're good.
Yeah.
And then you have the movie telling you like, we're all set. Like everything is fine here. Like we've wrapped up everything we need to in this moment. So it's a nice bit of layering that I didn't expect with it either. Mm-hmm. Especially with a catchphrase that does feel as generic as all set. So no, I loved that aspect. And I think that's just another reason that you keep thinking about the importance of this movie and how they've captured, again, the visual style, the acting, and the messaging behind it. It just felt out of place in a good way with the other two entries.
Yeah, I had written down in my notes during the first run of the show that Wings is just too big to fail.
Yeah, yeah.
And by fail, I mean
not win
Best Picture.
Right.
It's such a tremendous movie. I really think this is a movie that you could watch now, even if you're not the biggest fan of silent films, and have a good time with.
Yeah, I did.
Would you say this was your favorite of the three?
Oh, hands down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's aspects that I really liked of Seventh Heaven and The Racket. I think I watched them in the order that I prefer them least. Seventh Heaven was still good. Right.
Mm.
But then I watched The Racket. I'm very much watching in the order that we're talking about them intentionally. And then The Racket, I felt like I enjoyed a lot more of the, while the story wasn't as important, it felt like the character work was really there.
Mm.
And I think it actually, watching these in the order that I did, I think that it introduced to me the idea of these separate categories and what I'm really looking for in them. And then Wings just comes in and is like, hey, those categories that you've learned about, watch us take off.
Yeah.
And they just completely obliterate the other two in how they execute those, whether it's the shots. We talked about this. I love the shot in The Racket of the camera facing the club where you can see the stairs coming down.
Yes.
And you can see different parties coming in. And I love the camera work there. It's that level of intentionality that we talked about. Not a very impressive shot, but still very intentional. Mm-hmm. Something I didn't really feel in Seventh Heaven. that's blown away in Wings. You have the performance in The Racket that's done for the Scarcy character, Nick Scarcy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at my memory. And you think of how great that work is. I still think Nick Scarcy was probably the better character work that I saw done in all of these. But then you have the level of emotionality between Jack, David, and Sylvia to where you feel like, okay, well, you may not individually have the performance that he had as that role, but I'm buying these performances much more than I was buying most of the performances in the other two movies. And then just the messaging of it overall, it felt kind of uneven, both with Seventh Heaven and The Racket in terms of what was really trying to be conveyed. And with Wings, it really was more like a slice of life.
Yeah.
And it felt very, like it did not mean this, but landed the plane. It felt like it executed it perfectly.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've always found it interesting. Well, I guess I'll save that for the ceremony episode. I was going to talk about everything makes sense this year as far as winners go.
Sure.
Save that for ceremony.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think everything falls into place for this movie, and it is the perfect representation of just the peak of the 1929 Oscar year.
I wonder, too, if there's, like, you know, general audience in the 1927s, if they were looking for, like, shots, right? If there are people watching these movies that were like, wow, look at that shot. Like, that's amazing how they captured that. And if it wasn't more, like, being immersed into it, right? Like, it's the storytelling of that lends itself of, like, the shot and, like, the acting that overall you don't talk about those individually. You just talk about the storytelling.
Right.
How immersed you were.
That is curious. I feel like obviously your filmmakers will watch the movies and be like, oh, wow, how did they do that? I want to do something like that. And you're being inspired by things you've never seen before. But the general audience, I would imagine there's always been people who were fascinated by the technical aspects like that, like there are today.
I'll give you a perfect example. I was watching VHS last night, and I won't get into the details, but there's a shot that happens that's seemingly one take, where someone goes from the bottom of a room to the top of the room, almost like a floating thing, but then you see the door at the bottom of the room, and as the camera pans up and they land on the ceiling, there's another door that's actually upside down, and that door opens, and the same person who walked into the door at the bottom walks out of the door at the top, and I literally gasped. And I was just kind of like, I mean, that seems feasible, but that's just not what you expect, and it's amazing that they capture that in a shot.
Hmm.
And that's how I felt in Wings. Like, and I imagine that's how they felt in 1927 with that dolly shot, where like, yeah, it's not, you didn't do anything that is like black magic, but it is magic. And it is something that like when you're immersed in this story and you're watching, you just, it kind of takes your breath away for a moment to kind of realize, and I love this phrase, I didn't know you could do this.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know, not even just like physically, I didn't know like legally you could do this. Like they allowed you to do things like this. So it kind of makes you believe in the magic of movies again, where it's just like, just invent. And just do things.
Yes.
And just try things.
I love... one of my favorite things about covering movies from this era, or just anything not modern, is that you see how inventive people had to be. Because you had no other choice. You couldn't CGI whatever, obviously. So you get to see all of these cool tricks that they were doing, making tables that split in half and all of that. When you need a shot of someone in a plane, what do? You strap a camera to a plane. I love all of that. And I feel like that's something that, for especially big blockbuster movies, you're not seeing a whole lot of ingenuity anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, for me personally, it kind of takes away that movie magic feeling. So that's one of the biggest benefits I get for going back and researching these movies and watching these movies. Hopefully... you as someone that, like, this is kind of a newer experience for you, watching older film, you're kind of grasping that and finding some joy in that as well. It sounds like you are.
I am, yeah. You know, I think that it's one thing to have a movie that has these shots that kind of take your breath away, but not have a story that, like, grounds it at the same time. So that's why when you find a movie that does have those shots, that does have the performances, that does have the messaging that feels like it's communicating what it needs to communicate, and that all works perfectly together, talked about this in episode zero, it's just unbelievable that you're able to do this back then with the limitations that you had with camera work and editing, and you were still able to do it. To your point, do we need the shot? Then we're gonna do what's in that shot. We're not gonna like touch it up, we're not gonna do CG, we can't do anything like that. We have to get the shot.
Yeah.
So it's just impressive to see that happen. And it's all the better when the movie is as emotionally affecting as Wings is. I'm not saying it's the saddest movie ever made. It's not. But it just knows the range of emotions it wants you to hit, and it helps you get to that point. So it's interesting. And you know, one fun final fact for me is that when I was telling my coworker that I was watching these movies and going back and reviewing them and doing historical deep dive, he mentioned when we talked about Wings, he was like, "Oh, Howard Hughes directed that." And I was like, "No." Like, but yeah. I saw like how like confident he was. I was like, "Yeah." And I just like kind of rolled with it. But it's interesting that he thought that because, you know, the director is William, what was his last name?
Wellman.
There's an interesting bit of alliteration there.
Yes. Right?
And like even the history behind William Wellman and Howard Hughes, not too far off when it comes to like their experience with planes.
Right.
So it's interesting to kind of think about what the perception is of this and those little details that we get right. I mean, this is almost a 100-year-old movie. We're 98 years past. And it's interesting the historical relevancy that Wing still has, to where a coworker that I have does register the movie and does know the importance of the person behind it, but then just gets that like alliteration in history confused in someone else.
Yeah.
So it's still very cool to see, like, you know, A, how important it is to still go back and look at the historical accuracy of these, but also realize and recognize how it still affects us to this day.
Right. Yeah. I mean, not every movie from the 20s is being screened at your local indie theater for the 4th of July.
Right.
So it really is cool. It's a weird reminder that, yes, these movies are old, but their relevance isn't as distant as you think it is.
Not at all.
And I love that. I think Wings is great. Enough said. That's all I
Tough
got.
Tough opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really hot take you have on that.
I like it, man. I don't know. One thing, I guess, because we made a big deal about it at the beginning, before we start to wrap up, the score.
Yeah.
You said there were certain parts of it that you didn't feel like fit the tone as well as it should have.
I think if I did say that, I think I want to go back, because it's not that the score itself didn't lend itself well to the movie, but it was more that I think I wasn't anticipating the level of brightness that's depicted whenever they're in war. And so having the score match that, which is in tone, right? I mean, again, I think the selling point for me was the scene with Clara Bow in the ambulance.
Mm.
And that to me was like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, I know what you're trying to do here. So the tone makes a bit more sense.
Yeah.
So I also think that I 100% put my own experiences with The Racket and Seventh Heaven on Tubi into Wings. So when it wasn't fitting, I was like, well, it must not be the right score, or it's the score's
fault. Right.
So totally a me thing, not the movie itself. But no, overall, I'm not going to say that I've been humming specific melodies from Wings since then.
So funny.
But certainly it was effective.
Dude, the first time I saw Wings, I it was with the score that you saw on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I was humming that melody forever. I still do it now. I love the main do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
It's so good to me. But I totally get what you're saying. I wonder, too, if when it comes to war scenes and battle scenes, if they focus more on patriotism and, like, marches to kind of shy away from, like, the real-life horror that people have experienced in such recent memory. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't want to have really sad, somber music to remind you, hey, this was, like, 10, 15 years ago that you were dealing with this.
Right.
Let's make it more happy.
Yeah, I think also it's probably a level of immersiveness, right? Like, realistically, what was being played while they were training or, like, you know, overseas, more than likely it was, you know, a marching band or an instrument being played solely. So it probably just helps the tone of it overall to feel more authentic to have that and not play a specific score. But
yeah.
With that said, I'm never going to complain about a unique score to a movie.
Yeah. I've now seen this movie with three different scores. The first time I got the disc from Netflix DVD.
Yeah.
And it had two scores you could choose. The one that you listen to on YouTube. Another score that I think, I can't remember if it was added earlier or later than that original score. And then, of course, I saw the live organ. And of the three, I think the one that is on YouTube is my personal favorite. The live organ, if they're showing it next year, I think it'd be really cool to go check it out.
I love that.
It's definitely worth it. And really a solid movie for the 4th of July season, if you will.
Yeah. All the patriotism without the guilt.
Exactly. But overall, it sounds like you enjoyed Wings. Obviously, I enjoy it.
I enjoyed Wings. I enjoy Wings.
Yes. All Wings, right?
All Wings. I didn't even mention the food. Isn't that crazy?
Oh,
talked about the band, talked about the TV show.
It's probably the best Wings.
I think it is the best Wings.
So, what's your favorite wing flavor?
Any way they can find Clara Bow to like get on Hot Ones, I think that would be the best like wings.
Man, if that didn't just like suggest like making AI Clara Bow on Hot Ones, I would be so down for this, but I hate that idea so much.
I hate the idea of AI trying to depict Clara Bow eating Da Bomb.
Yeah.
That sounds like a nightmare to me, actually. the best wing, you know, I think that people would be like, for me personally, no, I think I speak for humanity.
Yes.
When I say it's dry lemon pepper rub.
I am not humanity then.
Oh, no. Come on, Kyle. Don't do
this. I can't do lemon pepper. You can't do lemon pepper? No, man. I don't want it. Sour wing. I don't want it. And I know it's not like pucker your lips.
I never thought of it as sour.
But a lemon is sour. Tangy. Yeah. Like a mango spicy. Sure. To me, that's like a tangy.
Dude, I had mango chicken at a food court mall food court, I guess I should say, yesterday. And I just felt like I was transported to like 2003.
Nice.
And it was just like, when is the last time I ate in a mall food court and had like not Panda Express Chinese food?
Yeah.
And it was just something like romantic about it. I don't know. It was weird. It was very strange to where it was just like, I'm sure this is terrible for me, but oh my God, am I in heaven? So I agree with you on mango flavoring.
Yeah.
But when it comes to chicken wings, to me, it's just specifically going to be lemon pepper.
Wow.
I can do a lemon pepper wet. You know what? Let's not be controversial. I can do a lemon pepper wet, right? I'm happy with lemon pepper wet.
Oh, okay, good.
But the dry rub specifically is what you see most places do, so I feel like that's the standard.
Oh, man. I'm uncomfortable. Listen, everybody, support your local mall.
And your wings.
And your wings. Wing shop. And go see old movies in theaters. Do all of those things.
As best as you can. Your malls and wing places and movie theaters that are right next to each other.
I'd go every weekend.
I do every weekend.
Damn. I need to go to the mall more and watch more movies.
No, you don't. Well, yes, you do. No, you don't, and yes, you do, in that order.
Wings! What would you give it out of 5 stars?
I mean, I think anything below a 4.5 is disingenuous.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that there's very little about this movie that doesn't hit very well. I loved it.
Every week I am astounded at your high ratings.
You think that, I mean, maybe just from my level of enjoyment.
Like, yeah.
I'm trying to not look back at a 2025 lens.
Right.
And I think if I watched this movie in 1927, I would have a lot of questions, actually. But specifically, I think I would be enjoying this immensely. So, yeah, 4.5. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah. No, if I were watching
this, I may give movies 7s out of 5s as we go on, as I like them more, but right. We'll see.
That's fair. I think if I was watching it in a theater in the 20s, this would be like a 5-star movie to me. It would have blown my mind.
Sure.
This is the last time I watched this was the third time I had seen it.
Right.
The wow factor has kind of faded away, like the initial wow factor. I still think it's incredible, but it's got the long bubble scene.
Sure.
That really kills me. And you know, you just get to a point where you've seen a movie so many times, unless it's one of your favorite films of all time, they just start to lose a little bit of their razzle dazzle. I think when I saw it at the Strand, I gave it 3.5 stars, which seems low. I'd probably bump it up to a 4 because it's just an enjoyable movie.
I think between your 3.5 and my 4.5, I think we need to do a communal 4 and feel pretty confident with that.
Okay.
But also, I recognize that we're all byproducts of our experiences, right? So, like, I've seen 3.5-hour movies. I've seen extremely long movies. To have a 2-hour movie with an intermission in it, I think, like, it didn't feel as long as I would have expected it to. And it maybe have felt in 1927. But certainly, seeing an intermission pop up, I was like, oh, really? Like, it's like 1.5 hours already? I'm like, no, it's just been, like, 50 minutes. So, I think there's things like that I've been conditioned to think are going to be longer, and it just flies by, so I don't think of it as being long, or that those bubble scenes play out too short or too long. It felt very, I guess I wasn't perturbed or upset by them.
Yeah.
It felt very much like I was accepting the movie.
I imagine the bubble scenes are more of like a second watch sure. that it starts to affect you.
But now that you've said it, I'm sure I'm going to drop it a rating for the bubbles.
Well, no, I think your 4.5 is great. I love that you're ranking these as high as you are.
Well, I'm also recognizing that with how many movies we're going to be talking about, there's not enough ratings individual to give them to where it's ranking the movies. It's just on their own.
Yeah.
So I'll probably be comfortable with something like a 4 or 4.5. My initial thought was 4.5.
Solid. I like it. You mentioned off mic that you wanted to do a little segment where we kind of talk about a movie we could recommend as like a double feature.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Is that still what you were talking about?
Yeah, no, I would love to do that. I wish I had one prepared. But for Wings specifically and the way that this made me feel, you know what? I'm just going to go off the deep end, Challengers. I think watching Wings with Challengers would be a really interesting dynamic. And not just because of the love triangle side, but also just the relationship between Jack and David does very much mirror what Art and I forget the actor's or the character's name, so Josh O'Connor. Those two individuals, the way that they balance off each other, it's almost like a romance in itself. And that very much mirrors what I saw with Jack and David. I also think there's a lot of interesting, wow, I'm really happy with this. I think there's a lot of interesting cinematography and shots within Challengers that kind of mirrors the idea of what was done in Wings, not with the dolly shot, but with filming the dog fighting scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tennis ball sequence towards the end of Challengers. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
They actually, the director, Luca Guadagnino, he actually puts, like, seemingly a camera in a tennis ball, or at least has the camera act as the tennis ball. So when someone hits the camera, it, like, goes, ooh, hits the court, bounces up over the net into the court, and then someone else hits it. And then they even have a glass case where the underneath the court, where you can look up and film the court from underneath and see the players moving, but it's made of glass.
Interesting.
And there's shots like that where you're just kind of like, in the moment you're watching here, this is amazing. But then you remove yourself from the story and you look at that shot and you're like, how did you do this?
Yeah. That sounds like the swing scene early on in Wings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually extremely close to the swing scene.
Dude, that's...
Because I'm so glad you mentioned the swing scene. That's so early on. Mm. And it's kind of a good introduction of like, hey, you probably want to pay attention to what the camera's doing right now. Because I think what most people would expect is that the camera is set up in one place and the swing is moving in and out of the frame. But instead, they mount the camera on the swing, allegedly, apparently. I actually don't know that for sure. But it looks like they mounted the camera on the swing. And as the swing moves, the background changes, but the characters stay in the same place the whole time.
Yes.
And it's such a great way of like moving through life, metaphor put into camera. I love that. And it does feel extremely... Yeah, you know what? With my whole chest, Challengers and Wings is a fantastic double feature.
I love that. I love that you went kind of with the love triangle element of Wings, and it turned into, it snowballed into, yeah, this is pretty much the same movie.
It's almost like you got to think that Luca was 100% thinking of Wings when he made this movie, because there's way too many similarities.
Man, I need to watch.
War. Well, not physical war, or literal war.
Tennis war.
Tennis war and, like, relationship war, yeah, and, like, you know, ego war, but not, like, war itself.
I need to watch Challengers.
It's good. For a movie that looked like it was just going to be unbelievably horny, it was extremely thought out and tense. It actually felt like a return of like your Indecent Proposals, your Basic Instincts in a way. Mm. Not quite as much murder, but a very similar like erotic thriller without like light on the erotic, high on the thriller.
Gotcha. Okay.
But still about sports.
You got to keep the tennis in there.
You got to keep the tennis in there.
Dude, my recommendation, I wouldn't even call it a recommendation because this isn't a good movie, but it's Pearl Harbor by Michael Bay.
Oh, sure.
It's definitely not as cool a pull as Challengers for being like, yeah, it's not a war movie, but it's entangled in this way. But Pearl Harbor is like basically the same movie.
It's almost the war movie.
Yeah, just about a different war. But it has the two guys fawning over the same girl, and it has a tragic ending. It's not very historically accurate, which Wings doesn't really pull a lot of historical fact other than, hey, there was a war and there were dogfights. The end. So,
yeah, but I think that's a really great double feature idea, though, because if anything, that kind of like complements both of our thought process about movies is that I think for yours, it's a very literal translation of, like, you know, the war and, like, some things that happen within those movies. And within my suggestion for the double feature, it feels very literal in, like, what the movie presents. So I think there's the narrative side and there's the technical side. And those, the marriage of those two, i.e. this podcast, is where the magic happens. So, no, that's a great idea. Great double feature, Rick.
Sweet. Triple feature it up and watch all three of those.
Yeah, and then, you know, go outside.
Yes.
After those 9 hours, maybe you should be outside.
I just saw Pearl Harbor is 183 minutes. So
it's over 3 hours?
Isn't that crazy?
I don't think I recognize that.
Chill out, Michael Bay.
You know, you have people complain all the time when something's like 2 hours and 40 minutes. And I'm like, you don't know how good you have it.
Yeah.
With a Paul Thomas Anderson movie that's 2 hours and 40 minutes. Like, I saw The Brutalist. Like, we can do this.
Yeah.
We can get through it.
Calm down. Watch your movies. Go outside. And then finish watching the rest of the movies.
Or, you know what? Maybe get on your camera-mounted swing outside.
Oh.
And mount a TV on there, and maybe you can watch your third movie.
The whole that. Swing just the has like 12 arms. You've got a fan going.
You know,
going.
Your 12-arm swing.
Yeah, I'm doing that. I'm getting that. Hey, guys, if you want to support the show so that we can afford a 12-arm swing,
aww.
Go to patreon.com/OUTAOpodcast. There's tons of perks. We mentioned being able to vote on your Best Picture true winner. You can do that.
What should have won?
Yeah, exactly. What should have won? I write a weekly newsletter. Right now, we're talking about doing like a bonus show exclusively for patrons. We're going to set up a goal of like how many backers we have. And once we reach that goal, then we'll start releasing that show. But I'm looking forward to that. Check that out. Check out all the social media links. They're going to be in the show notes. And shoot us an email if you have any thoughts on the movies or any thoughts on the show in general. OUTAOpodcast@gmail.com. We will read those on next week's episode, which will be our 1929 ceremony episode.
Right. And also, don't be afraid to engage with us on Instagram. We're very active on Instagram, both Kyle and I, and the Instagram account itself for Once Upon a Time of the Oscars. So at Once Upon a Time of the Oscars, tag us, you know, feel free to leave comments, talk about these movies. I'm thinking of the idea of when we post these episodes, posting like an entry specifically, a post specifically for that movie, so that can kind of be like a place for people to like talk about the movie and the episode altogether. So we'll try doing that. So feel free to follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Time of the Oscars and engage with us. We have conversations, we post stories, we'll post polls on there as well for fun stuff. So feel free to follow and talk with us about some movies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's it. Next year we'll cover the actual Academy Awards ceremony, go over like all of the winners, not just the best pictures, read any of the emails we get from you guys. And since we missed the first two double features with Seven Heaven and Racket, we'll do that there as well.
Yeah.
Perfect. It'll be fun.
That sounds great.
But that's going to do it for this week's episode. As always, I'm your host, Kyle.
And I'm your co-host, Ryan.
And we'll see you at the movies.